Vice President Robert Horkoff to introduce our next speaker.
Invited guests, comrades all. Chief Warrant Officer Guy Perron, retired, was appointed as the second Veterans Ombudsman in November 2010 for a five-year term. This comes after a career of almost 50 years of serving Canadians in many military and civil functions. Trained as a search and rescue technician and graduated in 1972 with qualifications as a paramedic, master parachutist, master diver, mountain climbing instructor, and survival instructor. He went on to serve as a search and rescue technician for the next three decades. In 1989, he assumed the function of Base Chief Warrant Officer in Summerside PEI, where he was in charge of personnel relations between the base and Air Force headquarters. As part of this assignment, he conducted administrative and internal investigations on behalf of the base commander. As a Chief Warrant Officer of Air Command in 1991, he advised on personnel and quality of life issues. Through frequent public visits to air units, he assessed the impact of policies on members and drafted recommendations to the commander. In 1995, he was appointed as Chief Warrant Officer of the Canadian Forces, the highest appointment for a non-commissioned member. In that capacity, he represented 47,000 non-commissioned officers and privates who are, or will soon be, the veterans of today. At the request of the Governor General, Chief Warrant Officer Perron also served as a member of the Armed Forces Council, which provided him with an opportunity to influence doctrine and policy at the strategic level. In 1999, he was posted to Egypt to serve as Force Sergeant Major of a multinational force defending the Sinai in accordance with the Camp David Accord. After retiring from the Canadian Forces in 2001, Chief Warrant Officer Perron joined the Office of the National Defence and Canadian Forces Ombudsman, where he assumed increasing responsibilities, first as an investigator and later as Director of Investigations and Director of the Ombudsman Special Response Team. His vast experience and attention to detail led him to be drafted by the Office of the Veterans Ombudsman in 2008, where he served as Director of Research and Investigations until his appointment as Ombudsman. His experience with Veterans Affairs Canada has allowed him to gain significant knowledge about programs, policies, and procedures related to veterans, and to appreciate the importance of the Veterans Ombudsman mandate. Married for 42 years, he now resides in Gatineau with his wife, Helena Morris. Comrade Perron is a staunch supporter of our veteran. Please join me in welcoming him, Guy Perron.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here and certainly a hard act to follow, so don't expect the same kind of stage presence as our Chief of Defense Staff, because I've been on the stage a few times, but he's got a knack for it, that's for sure. So thank you very much for the opportunity to be here, and I certainly would like to start off by thanking ANAVETS, the executive, the commands, and all the members of ANAVETS for what they do for veterans. Because it really doesn't matter whether you're part of an organization or if you're some appointed officials from Ottawa, what's important is never forget that the objective is make sure that our veterans and their families are treated fairly. And it doesn't matter who does that, whether they're paid for it, but it's much more to their credit if they do it for nothing. And so thank you for your work in that respect. The veterans of Canada certainly appreciate it. I'll just have a quick presentation about my office, where we've been, where we intend to go the next months or years. I still have a couple of years left. And then, of course, we'll open up for comments and questions, and I'll be happy to answer those. Et pour ceux d'entre vous qui parlent français, ça me fera plaisir de répondre à vos questions dans la langue de Molière. Donc, n'hésitez pas durant le temps d'adresser la parole. Si vous parlez en français, aucun problème. Okay, now we'll see if the technology works. Yes, it does. And it's the right slide package. One veteran is the theme that we've adopted for the Ombudsman, Veterans Ombudsman's Office since I took over and after a good discussion with my team. If you're out there injured and you serve your country, the first question you would ask yourself is, am I a veteran? Most people don't know. We know for a fact that homeless people that are asked if they're veterans say, no, I'm not. When you say, have you served in the Canadian Forces? They say, yes. And then you can say, you're a veteran. So we need to define veteran, the one veteran concept. The other one is, if you go into Veterans Affairs Canada or any Government of Canada services, and you say you are a veteran because now somebody told you that you were, the first thing they're going to ask is, what kind of a veteran are you? We don't believe that's right. We believe that there's only one kind of veteran. Anybody that served honorably in the Canadian Forces or the RCMP is a veteran, as far as we're concerned, and that's the way that we're trying to move forward with that concept so that we don't invent programs as we did in the past with World War II, World War I, but unfortunately they're all disappeared now, but with Korea and the peacekeeping missions. And lo and behold, a year and a half ago, National Defense invented another suite of programs called Legacy of Care. Three beautiful programs finally involving the families. And what's the caveat? Must have served in Afghanistan. So what about the people that might go to Libya tomorrow? We'll invent another program, make it more complex. So we need to look at that aspect of it, and the office is really engaged in that area. It's not only good to be one veteran, but I think what's important as well is that there's a lot of people doing a lot of good work in Canada for veterans and their families. But there's a lot of messages out there. There's a lot of messages that are not funneled, that are not put together, that are not really filtered and sent to the authorities. And I think that's important. We need to work together, the major organization as well as the small ones, to actually bring up the one message. And I think that's very important. And even more than that, eventually we should go to one voice. And that might take some time, but I think it's doable. So I'm working, our office is working with all of the veterans organizations, the social media ones, and to try to get what is it that they see that are the issues of concern so we can pursue that. A little bit about the history of the office. It was created in 2007. I'm an independent officer. I report to the Minister of Veterans Affairs, but not to the department. So I have direct contact, direct access to the office of the minister. I was appointed in 2010 for a 5-year non-renewable term. So I can't sit on the minister's lap and try to save my job because 3 years down the road, I'm gone. Period. And my wife thinks I'll retire. We'll see. There's a definition of the one veteran concept on linked to benefits or injuries. And I think it speaks for itself. You can read it. But people that suffer similar injuries and illness should have access to the same benefits, regardless of where and when they serve. And certainly, it's not possible to go backwards, but it's certainly possible to go forward. So I think that's a very important aspect of our work. I have three distinct roles. Pardon me. As a Veterans Ombudsman, my first role is to represent all veterans of Canada. We're talking about 700,000 on the CF side and about 36,000 on the RCMP side, plus their families. So my first role is in that capacity. I was in Dieppe in August with the minister in that capacity to represent Veterans of Canada. And as was mentioned before, I was there for a very emotional tour to spend a week with six veterans, a young one of 92 and the older one of 98, but some characters when you're there, where it happened, and they were there when it happened. I tell you, it hits you. So that was a good experience. My second role is as a special advisor to the minister. That allows me to go to the minister to actually make him aware of some issues of concern that surface in the community without having to resort to long reports and systemic investigation. So it's also a way in that capacity that I can actually provide more information to the minister than he gets from the department. So he might ask a question to the department, and I might come in and we might put in a different perspective on it. We might elaborate on things that are maybe outside the box So that capacity is there as a special advisor to do that. Very important one. And of course, the last one, which is to be the oversight of all the clients of Veterans Affairs Canada that are injured psychologically or physically. And that work is done by my team in Charlottetown. We have 25 people in Charlottetown that are actually working very closely with Veterans Affairs Canada to handle personal complaints from veterans. So that's my three roles. The guiding principles of the office are the same of any standards of the International Ombudsman's Association. So they're typical, ombudsman standards of action. The one thing that's a bit different about our office is that we're one of the few that has actually looked at service delivery to clients and come up with a perspective on fairness. How do you measure fairness? It's a pretty broad statement when you say it's fair, it's unfair. You could have a policy. The policy might be unfair because it doesn't meet the needs or whatever, and yet if it's applied legally, it is, the veterans are not being treated unfairly. So how do you define unfair treatment? We define it in those three aspects. First of all, the adequacy of the programs to meet the needs of veterans and their family. So are the programs really meeting the needs, or are they dated? Are they programs that were put into place back in the 60s that are expected now to meet the needs of the veterans of today? So that's important, the adequacy to meet the needs. The second one is that you can have programs all over the place, but if you don't have the resources, both monetary and personnel, then again, you're going to have some difficulty. And the last one, access. I mean, you can have the programs, you can have all of the money, the people you want, but access. And we all know that access to programs, Veterans Affairs, is not a problem, right? I'll leave it at that. So we're looking at accessibility to programs. So whenever we do a systemic review or we look at a personal case that is presented to our office, we will look at those aspects of it and say, hey, are they deficient in one of those areas? And if we build reports and recommendations for the future, they will include things and comments related to those aspects. How do we engage the people that we actually work with? I already said to the minister, I can go as a special advisor, or when I publish report, when we submit reports to the minister, they're fact-based. Evidence, fact, there's no assumptions in the reports. And I think if any of you have read the first two reports that we actually produce, the reasons for decisions that Marie Chaput referred to earlier, and the Veterans Review and Appeal Board report that we just did a couple of months back, there was nobody refuting the evidence there. The evidence was there. So the recommendations could lead to some comments and some discussions, but the facts are there about the reports themselves. With Veterans Affairs Canada, we have a collaborative relationship. We get lots of complaints every year, and we cannot handle complaints on the front end without being able to speak to somebody in Veterans Affairs Canada. And normally, we do it at the very lowest possible level. So our frontline officers will call the frontline officers in the district office or wherever and try to resolve it on there. And mainly, most of what we do is making sure that the people of Veterans Affairs Canada understand the special circumstances of a case. I mean, they're busy, we know that. Sometimes you don't have time to go to the very small details, but we do. So we can put that together and inform Veterans Affairs Canada about that. So that's very important. The veterans community, we have an open dialogue. I already mentioned, we look at the best ideas, we look at the best recommendations, we look at the concerns from all organizations and try to focus and filter it so that we can give some tangible recommendations to the minister and the government at large. Reports that are released to the minister are made public within 60 days. It's not his choice. It's the order in council that gives me the mandate to do that. So most of the time, the 60 days is to give the department and the minister the opportunity to do what they can to fix the issues or to bring about some recommendations. We have an advisory committee that's made up right now of 6 military veterans, 1 RCMP veteran, and in fact, Lauren is one of our advisory a council member. It's also made up of 3 healthcare professionals that are selected based on their discipline, looking at whatever we're going to be looking at in the future. They could be helpful in those areas. Long-term care, we have a retired medical doctor who went to rehabilitation medicine afterwards. So they help us focus our research, filter some of our recommendations, and help with our work generally. And they do a good job of it. including Lauren. The top seven issues that we handle in the office, that hasn't changed since 2007. The top one is healthcare benefits. And you know, if you've worked with some clients, that the healthcare benefits is a wide range of associated benefits that go with it. We have health-related travel. We have limits on treatment imposed on a yearly basis. We have a treatment plan. All these things lead to a lot of complaints. And this, fortunately, is one that is really, most of the time, easily handled at the front line between one of our frontline officers and Veterans Affairs Canada. So we have not done any systemic research in that aspect of it. The second one, disability pension and awards, people applying for benefits. And if I go back to our first report, reasons for decisions, this is the start. And we get a lot of complaints about application, disability pension and awards. Veterans Review and Appeal Board, we can't question their decisions. There are a quasi-judicial tribunal, so they have a functus officio decision, but we can look at procedural fairness and where the principle of natural justice respected. If not, then we can do something about it, which sometimes would force them to review a case, and in reviewing the case for procedural fairness, they might see some of the things that they missed in the first place. Again, I remind you that the report that we actually put out on the Veterans Review and Appeal Board had nothing to do with decisions. It had to do with decisions that were returned to the federal court and that the federal court returned to the board with errors of facts and judgment. So we were concerned that why were they sent back and why always the same ones? Could we do something to correct that? And I'll talk a bit more about that later. VIP, obviously, I think it's a popular program, so we do get complaints about that. The New Veterans Charter, Agent Orange, since the ex gratia payments are over now, since last December, the Agent Orange complaints now center more around corrosive chemical or exposure to chemicals, exposure to smoke from the oil wells on the Gulf War, those types of complaints, where there's not really a clear, distinct list of sequelae that might come from exposure, and there's always a debate there as to whether persons are relating the injury with their service is always a bit of a problem. And the last one is issues external to Veterans Affairs, and they would be the cases that we actually send to DND for review. And I give you an example. For instance, people are talking about terms of service, reasons for release. It could be something to do with their service record. We don't handle those things, but DND, Military Ombudsman, do. So we have an understanding with them. We can transfer files, and we'll do hot transfers of files in cases where people suffer from psychological injuries. We don't want people to relate their stories over and over again, which may lead them into crisis. So by respect to their condition, we do a hot transfer and we brief the Indian Ombudsman on those cases in particular. So basically that's the complaints that we get. The workload is pretty well the same since 2007. We get 7,000 contacts a year or so. That's all types of contacts, from emails, telephone calls, letters, and so on. And that results in about 1,400 cases that we open and deal with Veterans Affairs Canada. The differences between the two is that we provide our first service as information, referral, and assistance. So anybody can call the Office of the Veteran, of the Veterans Ombudsman, even if they don't know if they're a veteran or not. Well, we'll probably tell them. And if they don't know where to go, we'll tell them where to go, in a polite way, of course. But it's important that we answer all calls. So the first, a lot of the contacts we get have to do with, guiding people in the right direction, making sure that they go to maybe provincial programs which are more benefit to them. And then we do follow up afterwards if they've actually gone there. So basically that's, I said before, we resolved at the lowest possible level. Our frontline officers will work with frontline, our DG will work with the DGs in Veterans Affairs Canada. If need be, I'll get engaged with Mr. Hillier, Keith Hillier, as one of the ADMs. But we start at the very lowest possible level and work our way up to the minister's office. It's important that people tell us what they find wrong with the system, because this is how we can track issues and lead us to what is the next systemic review. Because it's the only way that we can find out, other than from the hints that we get from organizations in general, is the personal complaints. So we have a trend detecting system in our filing system that actually allows us to say, okay, yeah, all of a sudden we've got an unusual amount of complaints, let's say, about VIP. Well, then we know that there's a problem in that area and we can focus on that. So it's important for people to call us and let us know what's going on, even if we don't do anything. It might be just to get information, but at least we'll know what's going on, and that's important. Where have we been in the last couple of years? First of all, the first year was built and was actually, I was involved in, strengthening the organization, if you wish, rebuilding bridges, stabilizing the organization, introducing some governance. If any of you have been involved in building new organizations, of course, the first year are somewhat tumultuous. There's ups and downs. We're not sure about what you need and don't need, what the structure is. So my predecessor brought the awareness of that veterans in Canada had some problems, and then we had to build on the machine to make sure that we had an efficient machine to handle the problems. Now we have, and I think. We have a good enough machine, credible enough machine organization that we can actually move forward with some issues. And we have, as I already indicated. So we've done today two major reports, the systemic review reports that were mentioned. And if you think back of the slide of the main benefit, the main complaints, category of complaints that we get, the first one was healthcare. I said that's easily resolved with contacts with the frontline officers. The second one, application process, that's a very huge one. Because again, remember, you could have adequate programs, sufficiency resources, but if you can't access them, you got some problem. So what we decided to do is actually to look at the each end of the spectrum of application. First of all, being the adjudication, which is the letter of decision you receive when the decision is made. Does it contain all the elements that are necessary for you to either accept the decision or for you to move it forward with an indication of what was lacking? So that was the first report. And then we said, let's go to the other end of it and see what the Veterans Review and Appeal Board does, and then we'll be able to frame that, and subsequently we can build in reports in the middle. The one for the Veterans Review and Appeal Board, I guess, don't be misled there by the title of the report. The fact is that if the Federal Court of Canada returns some cases to Veterans Review and Appeal Board based on errors of facts or judgment, and a good example is not recognizing medical evidence at its right value, okay? That's a huge one, and that's one that's been around for quite a while. But if somebody went to adjudication, and they went to departmental review, and they went to VRAB review, and they went to VRAB appeal, and maybe even to reconsideration, and then to the federal court, and the court said you didn't recognize medical evidence. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it wasn't recognized at adjudication. So is it VRAB that is in the wrong here, or is it the adjudication, the early adjudication? So that's why we're concerned about these trends, and it's very important to look at the whole process. The next ones are coming up in the next month or so. The first one is disclosure of evidence. And any of you that receive benefits of Veterans Affairs Canada know that you don't supply your records. They go and get them for you. You don't know what's in there. The decision is made. If it's accepted, you don't care too much. You're happy with what you get. If you don't, and then there's a real violation of natural justice there, because you have not seen the evidence that was used to arrive at a decision. Because they get your records, they extract some copies of it, and then they make their decision at adjudication. But you don't know what documents to use. And as a good example, I can tell you of one pilot somewhere in Canada not that long ago applied for disability benefits related to vertigo. And it was refused through all of the levels right up to VRAB. The reason for the refusal was that when this individual was 8 years old, he actually fell flat on his face and had a concussion, and they say it was a pre-existing condition. This individual spent 35 years in the forces as a pilot, went through hyperbaric chamber, the centrifugal machine. I mean, if you got vertigo, hello. So, really. Fortunately, the VRAB has just decided that they went and accepted his disability. But it's little things like that that are frustrating that need to be looked after. The second report we'll publish in about 2 months is has to do with the red tape, the timeline, the whole process associated together. And don't get me wrong here, I'm not saying that everything that, you know, every application process is flawed, because obviously, you know, we wouldn't get that many veterans getting their benefits. So most, the majority, 70% of the people are accepted at adjudication. But my job is to make sure that we can go for the perfect if we can. Not the ideal, but maybe the perfect. Okay. Where are we going in the next couple of years? First of all, to review the Veterans Charter, the new Veterans Charter. You know that there was an enhanced version, the Veterans Charter, about a year ago now. And then we were able to influence the insertion of a clause there that said that the Veterans Charter will be reviewed in 2 years. That's coming up in 2013. We have a special team in place now that is actually working on that, trying to work, and they'll be sending their work to major organizations, including AnaVets, the Legion, NCVA, a lot of others, to actually get their input. And I think what's been happening with the new Veterans Charter is that, of course, it was thrown in, you know, together with very little communications at the time. People still don't understand the concept, and there's a lot of things that need to be done about it. We can't go back to a pension, disability, or, you know, the system of dependency. We can't go back to that. There's 30,000 and some people right now are being administered under the new Veterans Charter, and there will be more. So basically, we can't go back to that, but we can look at improving what's there now. What we think needs review in the Veterans Charter, the financial needs. Most veterans right now that are under allowances or from Veterans Affairs Canada, these stop at 65 years old. When do you actually need stability and money in your life? Probably when you reach 65. So the backcasting from 65. Down is something that, you know, we want to be innovative in our approach to say, well, have you thought about that? Is there any way that we could somehow work some of the programs so that actually when you turn 65, not everything disappears or something kicks in? We don't know yet. We're working on that, and what we want to make sure that that's looked at in the new Veterans Charter, because that's where it belongs. The career transition. People will tell you as well that, it's very confusing right now. There's the military DND career transition, and there's the Veterans Affairs Canada career transition. They're not harmonized. They have different standard. They work under different aspects. Completely, frustrating for people that are involved in that. So that needs to be harmonized. And families. I mean, veterans and serving members are not issued with the families. You know, it's not an issue. They're people. They need to be looked after. So we're going to put the emphasis on that as well. I mean, I'm very happy that finally National Defense, about 3 years ago, realized that young soldiers, 18 and 19, have parents. Imagine that. Young soldiers have parents and their families. I mean, if you're still around your family and your parents, and something happens to you out in the field, I mean, there's a need there to deal with the family. So we think that needs to be looked at as well. And finally, one of the things in the new Veterans Charter is that if it was intended to be a living document, then let's keep it alive and have some subsequent reviews every so often where we can adjust some of the to new programs, new trends, that sort of thing. So basically, that's what we're going to be doing. We've got a retired colonel by the name of Denis Guérin, who used to work in casualty management and chief of military personnel at one point. In fact, he was involved in the initial development of the NVC. He was working with us now as a team leader, and we'll be working on that to be ready for the parliamentary presentation. Okay. Now, the reservists are another big area that concerns us, and I believe it's some of the themes you're going to be looking at also during this convention, or most of the organizations look at that. First of all, we're concerned with the maximum salary for reservists under the NVC, the Earnings Loss Program, because what's happening now is that Although a regular force soldier would get a minimum $40,000, still the reservist is about $27,000 or so. Why? I don't really know. We can't get a straight answer. And again, it doesn't make sense. Look at the second one, a lower payout for accidental dismemberment. There's no such thing as a part-time amputation. Why wouldn't the legs of a reservist be worth the same as the legs of a regular soldier? I mean, it defies imagination. So those are things that you need to look at. Tracking reserve veterans is also very, very hard job. A lot of people fall through the cracks, they come back and leave their unit, and then they disappear into society. We have a concern about that as well. The definition of a veteran, as I said before, we recently were in Toronto at Good Shepherd and listening to the story of an old veteran, well, not an old veteran, a modern day veteran who has finished the DARE program, dependency program, is now going into supportive housing after coming off the street. And he said, the first question they asked him, they said, are you a veteran? He said, no, I never served in any war. Well, when did you serve? Well, he served 8 years in the forces, which is not enough to get the big ID card that we get after 10 years. But this guy was a veteran. Once he identified as a veteran, and he was a reservist as well afterwards, I mean, we knew then that he could have access to some benefits. So that's important to track the people and that they understand that anybody that served honorably in the forces or the RCMP is a veteran. Okay, in our activity in that area right now, of course, the one veteran concept, the two-year review in the NVC will include the pay for the reservist. We're working on a veteran's identity, which includes an ID card. I'll talk a little bit more about that. And then we have also designed a benefits browser, or benefits navigator, we call it, that we handed over to Veterans Affairs Canada to be used by their people right now to actually get an idea what benefits are available, but also eventually to be of use to the veteran, anybody out there that could access that and find out what benefits are accessible to them. And that's on the way, and the minister has promised it would be available to the public this year. So we'll see how far we go on that. We're doing an RCMP review. Any RCMPs in the house? Okay. The RCMP receiving veterans benefits and the programs associated with that and the way the members are treated while they're serving are a real can of worms. We can't really find out how they started. There's about 14 different MOUs. People don't know what's supposed to happen. Excuse me. So what we decided to do is that I went out and saw the new commissioner, and I asked him two questions. Do you care about your injured force members while they're in the force, and you care about them when they're retired? And he said, yes, I do. I said, fine. And would you like to know what you get for $100 million a year that you give Veterans Affairs Canada? Yes, I would. So, okay, so we've got a working group together now that's going to be looking at, from scratch, everything that the veterans, that the RCMP, injured RCMP gets while in the force. We have an officer from the RCMP division that's working with us on that, and I have an ex-RCMP on my investigative team. So they'll be working on that right now. And the first phase is just to see what is there now. Then once we've done that, we can look at the comparative with the CF. And I think what's really the reality is that the Canadian Forces work on universality of service principle. You know, if you can't fight, you're out. However, the RCMP normally work on a duty to accommodate. So they try to keep people as much as they can. In the fiscal reality of today, do you think that's going to last very long in the RCMP to be able to do that? I think it's going to be money for guns, and that's it. So more and more, there will be less money, that is going to flow to veterans or to injured members unless they go to one department that is designed to look after injured people. So I'll leave it at that for now, but that will take about 2 years. We're about 6 months into it right now, and things are working really good. And wherever I go on an outreach visit, I meet with the RCMP detachments and talk to them about that. The other reports and reviews that we see there we're working on right now. The National Identification, the National Veteran ID Card is really, the report will be a National Veteran's Identity. Because when you leave the forces, And you've been framed for years with hugs and uniformed hugs, of course, and everything is actually, you know, set up for you, and you know where to go, and people are helping out, and you know, it's everything is done for you. Then all of a sudden, you're nobody. You're nobody. Whether you retire, whether you just want to, you know, find another job, you're nobody. We believe that there should be an identity that you get when you leave the forces. You switch from being a member of the armed forces to being a member of Veterans Affairs Canada, and you get a card that says, I'm a veteran of Canada. Injured or uninjured, it doesn't matter. 10 years, no, under the definition of a veteran. If you served honorably in the forces, you should get a veteran's card. That veteran's card should have a number on it that gives access to Veterans Affairs Canada, to your service record and your health records. The first thing and the first hurdle in getting benefits of Veterans Affairs Canada is proof of service, injury and causality between the two. I mean, if it's right there on that card, you know? I mean, so just think about that, that within, you know, that we could have a million veterans out there, there's about that many, that could have a card in their pocket that says, I'm a veteran of Canada, and that card could be useful. It could be a foundation chip that is used by other organizations. For instance, it might, could be a veterans organization group. Could actually have their membership, you know, attached to that chip. There could be, you know, so it's a membership card. It could be a CF Appreciation Organization that's just sprouted out not that long ago. They issue everybody a plastic card. That could be part of that as well. So we firmly believe that it's an identity that's important. The card is a major asset. And in fact, in this case, we've actually gone even, normally we don't tell the department how to suck eggs, excuse the expression, but but in this case, what we've done is that we've actually contracted the firm to say, okay, how long would it take, how much would it take, you know, how much would it cost to give a, to get a card like that for a million people? They gave us the cost, and we've got right there in, you know, black and white, all of the steps across Canada to identify a million people, issue them with a card, and within so many days. And so the answer to the report cannot be, well, we'll look at it, we'll see what we can do, we'll cost it, and then we'll get back to you. It'll be part of the report. Okay, the other reports are things that we've been working on for a while, the reviews. The first one is report. The other ones are reviews. Long-term care, I told you we're there for innovation. We're there to look beyond what you've done for the past few years. So right now, for instance, there is VIP that is, in fact, will be changed to a grant, a yearly grant. How beautiful is that? Because right now there's living at home individually with the help of a grant, or there's long-term care, which is $8,000 a month. Now, in between the two, why couldn't that grant be given to people for assisted living? Same money, no difference in cost for that, a saving in fact, in some cases, because the long-term care doesn't have to be paid at that full price. But there are assisted living facilities that provide care for veterans that are semi-mobile, that sort of thing. So that's innovative way to look at the future. What about the young veteran of today that might need long-term care in 20, 30 years? What about long-term care insurance? People know that there is long-term care insurance available in Canada? Well, there is. And actually, you could have maybe Veterans Affairs Canada and some of the veterans partnering together to buy this long-term care insurance so that when it happens, and they find themselves in that situation, there is care available there. So new ways to look at things. I mentioned already VIP, mental health, families, we're working on all of these. And then, of course, the follow-up on our reports, 6 months after we publish a report, we go back to the department and say, where are you with the recommendations, and we'll take it from there. So basically, this is just to the closing slides here. What we're looking at is the outreach will carry on the outreach. And again, thank you for the opportunity, because there's nothing better than you know, a room full of people to talk to and to pass on the ideas and to hear concerns if you have any. So that's our outreach, and it's designed to inform, educate, and learn both ways, not just you, but us as well. So I think that's important. There's a few focal points that will come up within the veterans community in the near future. The first one is the Auditor General report in October. We'll be looking at the transition between CF and the military, the CF and the civilian. We're not sure yet How far it's going to go, we were consulted to some extent, but certainly we hope that it'll deal with issues like harmonizing programs and that sort of thing. We also have the House of Commons Committee on the VRAB review. We, we influenced that one by our last report, and we were told last week that it will go in front of the committee in October. So we will be, in front of the committee to talk about the Veterans Review and Appeal Board. And again, the report is not negative towards the board. The board is a critical element of the application process. If it wasn't for the board, it'd be, 2,000 people a year would not get their benefits. So, we have nothing against the board itself, but I think there's improvement that could be made, and, it's important to look at that and to help the government in framing that review so that it could be useful to everybody. And also, I talked about the parliamentary review for the charter. The last one goes into back one message. Again, the more we can do together to actually send the right message to the government of Canada, then the better off we're all going to be. And of course, we need everybody's engagement, and I think we have that from the organization, so I thank you for that. Okay, basically, I think that covers an awful lot of stuff. I know I'm, once you give me a podium, I'm not like the CDS, but I could repeat the same thing in French, but so. I open it up for comments, questions. We have a few minutes for that.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So anybody that wish to, there's mics there that are available. If you want to make a comment, good or bad about Veterans Affairs Canada, about the Ombudsman's Office, sometimes we don't get the good news, we only get the bad stuff. But
My name is Bob Gray. I'm the RCMP Veterans Advocate for the province of Alberta. And at this convention, there will be a resolution presented to ask the federal government through the Solicitor General to supply VIP for RCMP veterans. I could tell you horror stories, and we could go on for hours about the issues, but I challenge the Commissioner of the RCMP to say that he actually is concerned about the veterans. Previous commissioners couldn't care less. So hopefully today my comrades will support that resolution when it hits the floor, because it is definitely dearly needed right across Canada. We have veterans of the RCMP in their 80s, crippled, on the job. They've got a K card, which will give them their medicine, but they do not get VIP. So hopefully this will change. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a good comment. In fact, we know that one of the frustrations of the RCMP at this point in time is the fact that they were not part of the new Veterans Charter, and I wasn't party to any discussions on that matter when it first was introduced. But VIP is a big part of the NVC. There are some ways that some RCMP veterans could get attendance allowance to, in some cases, very few cases, but you're right, it's a program that is meant to increase people's opportunity to stay at home, and I think it it certainly is of value. So, but this review that we're doing will look at all of that. So, thank you for that. Anything else? Wow. Good.
You must have been very good.
Must have covered everything,
apparently.
Thank you, Comrade Perron. That was a very, very informative.